We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
From Pod World Headquarters, this is the Carolina Insider from Learfield IMG College.
We're back. Time for another edition of the Carolina Insider. Jones and Adam here with you. Adam, we thought this might be a easy peasy week of pod where just some light topics to discuss. But instead, we got a lot of hot info to discuss on the show today.
And perilously close to a pod after dark.
Yes, not even on purpose.
Right.
So, we'll give some final thoughts on Wake Forest. Full breakdown of that game, rapid reaction style, came Saturday. If you're a subscriber, it should be in your feed. If you're not a subscriber, what are you doing? Subscribe to this podcast. So, we'll briefly talk about that. We will talk about big news from the schedule side of things where Carolina's last two games of the season, Western Carolina and Miami, have flipped. We'll talk about that. There was a basketball scrimmage on Monday. No big deal. Adam and I were there. We'll
have the full box score coming up in a few minutes.
That's right. Specific minutes. We will very detailed discuss who did and didn't play.
The gold feed has all the plays the Tar Heels ran with the calls for each one and how to defend them.
Now, so we'll talk a little bit about that. And Adam, we did an interview on January 23rd.
Holy cow.
Of 2020 that will air on this episode. And it's a little bit of a different interview. It is with Tyson Lusk, and I'm guessing that a large majority of you don't know Tyson, but he was longtime equipment manager for Carolina baseball, now works in Columbia, South Carolina, with the Rams Club equivalent for South Carolina, and also, Tyson is gay and came out to very publicly with the South Carolina team. And so we talk about both his memories of baseball, the relationships that he built through Carolina baseball, and we talk about that very monumental decision that he made to do that. And so a lot of different directions that this interview goes.
If if that immediately sours you on the interview, I would merely ask you to just listen to it. Just because the vast majority of it is about sports and Tyson's unabashed love of the Tar Heels and some great memories he has when he was here with some unbelievably good Diamond Heels teams. I would just ask you to listen to it and see if you don't come away thinking, you know what? I like that Tyson Lusk fella.
So that's coming up in just a little bit. Adam, do you even have a little Sebastian list, or are we listless today? Trust me. I am listless at this point.
Given the likely pod length, I was thinking that although I won the toss, I would defer all list until Friday's episode.
Okay. Also, just before we get started, well, first let me tell you that we're brought to you by LS Tractor. Don't let your outside chores or projects cause you to miss any of the Tar Heel game action. Let LS Tractor make short work of those puppies, from normal yard maintenance to larger projects as well. LS Tractor has the machine for you. Where can you learn more about this, you might ask? LSTractorUSA.com. LS Tractor, what's it about for you? Now, also, we're going to have a Roadhouse Challenge here in the near future. And so if you didn't see, we sent the poll out last night. And Adam, it is a basketball-themed Roadhouse Challenge. The four possibilities are Blue Chips, Hoosiers, Space Jam, White Men Can't Jump. So if you missed that on Twitter last night, go find it and vote and help us choose what will next go through the Roadhouse Challenge.
Four fine choices. Your vote is important. These last few votes we've had on all variety of topics have been very close. So get your votes in. Vote early and often. 1,000 points of light. Vote now.
Okay, Adam, we broke down the Wake Forest game pretty well the other day.
I'd give it a solid A-.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we smoked it as we normally do.
Right.
I don't really have a ton else to say other coming off of it. Sam Howell named ACC Quarterback of the Week. Not a big surprise there. He was on a bunch of National Offensive Player of the Week lists as well. Michael Carter was co-ACC Running Back of the Week. Daz Newsome was ACC Receiver of the Week. All of those things make perfect sense. And there was no media availability for Mac Brown and the coordinators, as there traditionally is on Monday, with the Tar Heels not having a game this upcoming weekend. So didn't hear any extra opinion from them. And so I don't know a whole lot more what we didn't say the other day, other than, and we touched on this, but I think it's worth bringing back up, is just how important that win, I think, may end up being for Carolina. Even just, I mean, if the Tar Heels were, I know, again, 5-3, 6-2, but 5-3 with Notre Dame and Miami still on your schedule, I think is a difficult task. So with two really difficult opponents, a game against Western where you figure you're going to be favored heavily to win that game, it just was a really important win, I think, for Carolina football.
Both for the year and for the program.
Yes.
The in-state aspect is very important to what Mac Brown's trying to do. Carolina needed to beat a team like Wake Forest. Even if it wasn't Wake Forest, a team like Wake Forest. A solid, well-coached team that isn't going to mess up, which they didn't. Figure out a way to beat them and learn from that going forward. I don't know if you've ever heard Mac Brown say this, Jones, because there was no Mac Brown show last night,
so right. Maybe
you haven't. But you got to win locally before you can win nationally. The Tar Heels have taken care of the locally part this week, and they'll get to finish out the season, find out about the national part.
You know, so I did an event with Coach Brown on Monday, a virtual event, Adam. And a lot of the stuff that he said is stuff that we have heard him say before, because it was just kind of a generic football discussion and him returning and all those type of things. But he did say one thing in that vein that you're talking about that piqued my interest. And that was when he basically said, okay, guys, you know, this is something that we've been hammering, the win your local against your neighbors, and that's check the box, achieved it. And now you have an opportunity to make waves on the national scene. And again, we mentioned this at one point. Somehow the Tar Heels are under-talked about after being over-talked about, I think, at one point. But they will be talked about plenty with the upcoming game against Notre Dame, and they will really be talked about if they win the game. And so Carolina has that opportunity, I think, to get back some of that national attention that it lost with its losses this year. And we'll see how they handle it. It's a while before that game occurs, of course, next Friday. And Notre Dame's in the same boat. They don't play this upcoming weekend. So each team has 2 weeks to get ready.
There's been a lot of talk about Javonte Williams not getting individual national attention. And we've said this before. If he has a Javonte Williams-type game against Notre Dame, I assure you he will get plenty of national attention. If he just does what he's been doing the rest of the season, same with Sam Howell. If they play their normal game, they will get all the attention they could possibly want because, Jones, winners get the awards and rewards.
Yeah, I've heard that. So, Adam, there was big news late on Monday about the ACC football schedule. Kind of out of nowhere. So there were, I believe, 7 teams that had their schedule altered in some way due to the fact that seems like there were some positive tests and subsequent quarantining of student athletes within the Miami football team. That's word for word from the ACC. So relevant to Carolina is the fact that the Tar Heels game against Western Carolina will now be on Saturday, December 5th. That was when Carolina was originally scheduled to play at Miami. The game against Miami will now occur on Saturday, December 12th. That was the weekend that Carolina was originally scheduled to face Western, but the Western game was actually scheduled for Friday, December 11th. So essentially, those two games just flipped. Carolina will play Notre Dame just as has been scheduled, then another home game against Western Carolina, then finish the regular season up with a road game at Miami, assuming that this new schedule holds. Other games, Wake Forest and Louisville, had their game moved up a week to Saturday, November 28th. Miami at Wake Forest has a game now. Basically, that was scheduled for the 28th, got moved back to the 5th. Louisville and BC had a game that was moved from November 27th to December 12th. And then Georgia Tech and Miami will play on Saturday, December 19th, if the Hurricanes, because Georgia Tech can't be there anymore because of their record, if the Hurricanes are not involved in the ACC championship game because they can't play two games at the same time. So, Adam, it has been a long road of this season. We've seen games moved and postponed and changed, but this is the first time that you've seen really a big domino effect of one team that had problems, and that results in multiple teams, including the Tar Heels, having to alter their schedule.
Louisville's sitting there going, what did we do?
Yeah.
We weren't even playing Miami. All of a sudden, all our games are different. But if this is the worst thing that happens to the ACC football schedule, then 2020 ACC football was a victory because everybody's going to play the games they were going to play. Tar Heels are going to play all the opponents they were going to play, just in a slightly different order. I think you could argue from a Carolina perspective, maybe this layout of games is a little more favorable than the way it was originally. You don't have to play Notre Dame and Miami back-to-back anymore, which are your two toughest remaining games, I think it's fair to say. So if this is the worst thing that happens, that's a win.
It does seem, Adam, with the current COVID numbers, and we saw this past weekend for college football where there were more than 10 games that were either postponed or canceled, that I mean, we're hitting a pretty delicate time as far as continuing to compete with COVID.
And we're at the point where football is coming to the point that everyone's really interested in, which is the playoff, and basketball is starting. So you have these two things overlapping that make it difficult. I thought it was interesting that Rick Pitino, who's now the head coach at Iona, did you realize that?
Yes, but I knew it, and then when I saw what you're about to say, I was like, oh yeah, Rick Pitino's at Iona.
So Rick Pitino thinks that they should push back the start date of college basketball, I think, to January 1, and move the NCAA tournament from March to May. Well, sorry, Rick Pitino, but the NCAA's already said the NCAA tournament's happening in March, probably in Indianapolis, where everything should be in the entire world. But the reason Rick Pitino's saying that is because Iona's on a 14-day hiatus because they've got virus problems. So everyone's invested in their own rationale. But those, you know, someone should do a little bit on how the ACC schedule should have left room for things like that in basketball.
Yeah.
It's going to happen. I don't want it to happen, but probability tells me it is.
You bring up another piece of relevant new news, Adam, and that's that the NCAA said that it's not going to have multiple sites for the NCAA tournament, that it's all going to be at one place, and it's probably going to be in Indianapolis. I think it's probably the right move, but there are a lot of logistical questions that have to be answered, of course. It's not going to look or feel or be scheduled like your normal NCAA tournament.
And I think it's smart to make that plan right now. I don't know that I'd scrap everything just yet.
Well,
this is November.
As we've said multiple times, trying to make decisions for something 3 months from now, right now, doesn't make sense. So plan for this and say, hey, we're planning to do this. It may not happen, but just be aware that it might happen. And so this is one of the options we are going to explore when it gets to this point. And yet, here we are making a definitive choice in November for March with no wiggle room in the schedule for anybody as they actually play the actual season. Like, invest your time in making those decisions now, not this decision now. Again, I think it's good to have the forethought, and I think ultimately it's going to be the right play, but don't lock yourself into it right now. Why does no one understand this in any facet of life? I don't get it.
What's the harm in telling your NCAA tournament planning group, all right, you 10 are in charge of planning the one site NCAA tournament. We think that's probably going to happen. But Boise, the Meadowlands, Louisville, whatever the other 16 sites are, you guys keep doing what you're doing.
Right.
We might be coming to you. But we might not. So just understand you might be doing all this work for nothing. But honestly, what else are you doing right now? Just plan for it, just in case. And maybe by, say, February 15th, we'll give you a go or no go. Based on 3 months of things that are going to occur between now and then. But now, if I had to ponder, what would behoove the NCAA to make a firm plan to ensure that the NCAA tournament definitely occurs? I wonder if it might be some sort of financial reason that they want to make sure this happens no matter what.
On these dates.
These days, we will have these same television programming windows. CBS, don't you worry. You're going to get some games on these days. TNT, playing your studio show. It's happening. True TV, you got that selection show, guys. No one knows what channel you're on, but it'll still happen this year. Why not just tell everybody to plan? There's no harm in saying we don't know. We don't know. We want it to all occur. Just like always. Of course we do. It might end up that Rick Pitino's the smartest man in the entire world. He might be right. We might get to March and go, man, you remember when Rick Pitino said this should happen in May? He was right. He wasn't right when he booked that hotel room for that post-game NCAA tournament celebration in 1995, but since then he's gotten smarter.
I'm looking forward to the many battles about the blue cups in a pandemic at the NCAA tournament.
Well,
do you think, I mean, it's going to be like, guys, this is still the NCAA tournament. We need the proper carpeting and RCA dome or whatever it's called now.
We have sterilized all these cups, sanitized, whatever you have to do to them, we've done it. We only want you to use, but if there's one organization that can lock something down beyond all meaningful detail, it is the NCAA. So if anyone's qualified to put on a pandemic tournament, I nominate the NCAA. I just wish they would maybe wait just a little while and let's just see what happens before we know for sure.
Adam, we're not even through football and it's been exhausting.
Imagine all those Pods After Dark we're going to do this year. At some point, we got to talk about all the various scheduling things that are occurring. Maybe next week we can do that.
If you were sitting there going, I need more Jones and Adam. Well, we got some good news for you.
Why don't they do more of those Carolina insiders? They're not doing hardly anything.
We got good news for you coming up soon. I got good news for you, too. That's that we're brought to you by UNC Healthcare, dedicated to caring for champions of all kinds and help keeping the game and at your very best. See their lineup at unchealthcare.org/sports. By the way, just a little shout out to all the healthcare workers. It's funny because I think, not funny, everybody was all about, thank you, frontline workers. And now we're 6 months later, and it's just like, oh, yeah, they're still doing their. Like, I can only imagine the level of exhaustion that they feel. So, virtual fist pound to healthcare workers.
Yeah. And we get the chance to see some of those folks. We got to see Dr. Mario Scioca today. Yeah,
former pod guest.
I am Dr. Mario Scioca. See you later, Big Grits.
He does not seem too frazzled, but that's just Dr. Scioca for you. Like, he's going to handle this thing. Don't you worry about it. He's going to give you some smart advice.
He's going to be jovial.
Yeah.
And it was nice to see him when he wasn't sticking a thing up my nose to test me for COVID. It was nice just to say hello to him. I enjoyed that interaction more.
He then looked at you when he left and said, I'll see you later this week, Angel.
That's right. Time's a ticking, sir. I'm going to stick that thing up your nose soon enough, my friend. Okay. Adam, what do you say we get to this interview?
Do it. It's about time.
Yeah. Yeah. We've only had it since January. And you may say, why haven't you run it?
Right.
You may be asking that very sound question. Honestly, we were about to run it, and then COVID hit, and it got weird, and then other stuff started happening. And then, not because I kind of forgot that we had it, quite honestly. And then Adam texted me one day. He was like, hey, we still have that really good interview with Tyson. And I was like, yeah, we do still have that. We should run that sometime.
It was about to run when the world fell apart.
Yeah.
And then there was that time period where it felt weird to run anything where people were actually in here because Tyson was actually in here. I remember those days when people came in here and did interviews. I liked that.
Yeah. Okay, so we're going to get to this interview, come back, and then I'm sure Adam and I will have some things to finish things up with.
Hoops.
Oh, yeah. That's right. That scrimmage. Adam is going to get you very detailed notes coming up after this interview. But first, let's get to our conversation with Tyson Lusk here on the Carolina Insider.
I was trying to think of what to say about our guest today, about how to introduce him. And this is the best way I know to describe Tyson Lusk to you. He loves the Tar Heels just like you do. He feels it just like you do. And that's not the reason why he's on the podcast, but it darn sure helps. So, Tyson, we really appreciate you coming by and giving us a few minutes.
Sure. Glad to be here.
For people who don't know, first, catch them up on what Tyson is doing now.
Sure.
And then explain to people what your relationship with Carolina is.
Right. So currently I'm an assistant director for development at the University of South Carolina.
But prior,
we can edit that. Don't worry. We'll take that out.
Yeah, we'll yeah. We'll
at make the University of Carolina.
Of beep.
Whatever you got to do. Just don't get me in trouble with the guys back home.
Gotcha.
All right. So, but prior to that, I started that in August. Prior to that, I was our director of baseball operations at South Carolina. Did that for 6 years. And then obviously before that, I was the equipment manager in North Carolina and the student manager for the baseball team from the fall of 2005 to the spring of 2013. And interestingly, Adam, this is the first time starting in August that my direct report or supervisor has not been a UNC grad.
Wow.
Mike Fox, Chad Holbrook, Mark Kingston, all UNC grads. So no disrespect to Wayne Hyatt. He's a wonderful person. Thank you, Wayne, if you're listening. But he did not attend the University of North Carolina. So it's a little bit of uncharted territory for me. But Wayne's a great guy, and he's living up to the precedent set by Mark Kingston, Chad Holbrook, and Mike Fox.
Okay, so Tyson, how does one go from assistant or student manager of North Carolina baseball, to now associate at South Carolina? I mean, there's several large steps there from point A to point B.
Well, I can point directly to how it started. It was in the spring of 2005 at North Forsyth High School in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. So I went to North Forsyth, and we had two players on our team, one particularly, Addison Johnson, who was being recruited by North Carolina and Clemson. Addison ultimately, major mistake, chose to go to Clemson, which anyone who chooses to go to Clemson is making a major mistake. But anyway, I digress. Coach Holbrook was recruiting Addison at the time and was at North Forsyth. And a couple of weeks before, it actually goes back to Adam. So I read one of Adam's.
Good job, Adam.
Yeah. Thanks, Adam.
Yeah. I made this whole thing happen.
Yeah. Without you, who knows what would have happened. So I read one of Adam's articles about Reese Holbrook. And I knew who Chad. I mean, I grew up a North Carolina fan. I grew up, idolizing Dean Smith, the greatest coach in the history of sports. So if there was anyone from the University of North Carolina who was at my high school, I was going to find some reason to go and talk to them. Coach Holbrook watched the game. He was leaving. I went up to him in his vehicle and just said, "Hey, my name's Tyson. I've actually just been accepted to UNC. I'm really fired up about it. I read about your son Reese. I'm thinking about you and your family." And he was very nice. Obviously, Chad's a wonderful, wonderful person. Drove off, and then he pulls back in the parking lot, and I was with all my friends in high school, and he calls me over. So I go back to his car, and I thought that was, I was the coolest guy ever.
Hold on, guys. Mr. Stranger Danger wants to talk to me. Yeah. Let me go up to this stranger's car.
So go back, talk to Coach Holbrook, said, give me your number, call me. I want to send you some UNC stuff. We're fired up to the year coming to UNC. When you get to campus, call me. So I did, and Coach Holbrook sent me some cool UNC swag. So thank you, Coach Holbrook. Thank you, Nike. Get to campus in Craig Dorm, just right up the street here, room 459, with roommate Terrence Petrie, who Terrence and I went to high school together. And, of course, Terrence was on the varsity basketball team here after playing JV for 2 years, so a really cool story. And across from the hall was Pat Moody, by the way, another Tar Heel basketball player. So we had two UNC basketball players in our suite in Craig, fourth floor, shout out Craig Dorm. But I'm sitting in my dorm like, well, I gotta follow Coach Holbrook. So, I contact the Tar Heel baseball office, go meet with Nate Yarbrough, who's hiring student managers. Nate hires me. And then 8 years later, there were six trips to the College World Series, a few ACC championships in there, a lot of good memories. And Coach Holbrook then left to go to South Carolina, becomes the head coach of South Carolina. His director of operations job opens up. So then I joined Coach Holbrook in Columbia in the fall of 2013, then worked the baseball program there with Coach Holbrook and then Coach Kingston, another good Tar Heel, and then moved over to development this year.
I have a lot of questions, but before I get to them, I want to say this. Adam, you write a lot of good columns. I think the one about Reese Holbrook is one that gets brought up a lot. When you write one, do you think that, hey, you know what, this one may have I'm turning you into the interviewee for a second here, Adam.
Yeah, I'm not really. This is supposed to be about Tyson.
So, no, please, go ahead.
No, but, I mean, Tyson said that article was impactful to him, and I've heard other people say that, too, about that specific article. I mean, and I know the subject matter was the big reason why.
Right.
But do you ever leave one going, yeah, that's a good one?
No. I mean, you meet people who you know. These people are people who people are going to relate to. And Reese and Chad and Jen were that, because everyone knows what that's like. And so there have been some other ones like that, but it's about the people who are living the story. And the fact that I get to write about it, like, Tyson would have been affected by that story no matter who wrote it. That didn't really matter. He was affected by Reese and Chad. And so that's what does it.
All right, now, let me get back to thanks for hogging the air, Adam. Let me get back to the reason we're here.
Adam is underselling his impact of his writing just a tad, for the record.
There's a lot of Carolina stuff I want to talk about, but for someone who, and this is, I think, something unique, because something at least I don't think Adam's ever had to deal with, and I know I haven't. So you grew up loving the Tar Heels. You grew up and then eventually worked for the Tar Heels, and so you could root for them while you were also working professionally. Then you get to South Carolina. That doesn't mean you don't love the Tar Heels anymore, but how do you then have that balance of you love Carolina, but you also love the Gamecocks because sure. It's part of what you're doing?
Well, you know, I teach a class at South Carolina. It's called University 101.
Whoa, big time. I didn't know we had a professor.
Thank you, Dr. Lusk.
Thank you. Yeah, seriously. And I tell my students that, hey, you're here. It's your first semester at South Carolina. When you leave here in 4 years, you need to say you went to the best college in the world. And I want to help you, show you the resources and the things you can do to make that be true. And I think if you go to college, go to university, wherever you go, you need to leave there saying, I went to the best school in the world. Now, and I did. And I'd argue with anyone about that. And I'm sure there are people that go to other institutions that say the same thing. But, you know, I live 3.5 hours away from Chapel Hill. I could live in China, and I would still have the love and passion for the university because, I mean, it's not the belts. Well, the old stone wall, Chris Buckton. I mean, Charles Carroll got it right. We don't need to screw it up. You know, it's
Adam.
it's just a special, special place. The people are special. The camp. I mean, every time you come back on campus, you get a little special feeling when you arrive. I mean, I'm not joking about that. Something feels special, especially when you're away. You know, when I was here for 8 consecutive years, you take for granted a little bit. You pull up on campus and you're on campus, but then you move away and you come back on campus. It's really, really special. You know, it's cool to ride by Craig Dorm. I mean, my dorm room didn't have air conditioning. It was not great, but I think it was the best thing in the world. You know, I made lifelong friendships. You know, that never really goes away, especially if you grow up in North Carolina, if you grow up idolizing the Tar Heels. I mean, Dean Smith, the greatest coach in the history of sports, idolized these guys. Donald Williams. I mean, I remember when I was in, I guess it was elementary school, the seniors from the 93 team were barnstorming, so I've got Pat Sullivan, Pierce Landry, and Donald Williams' autograph still in my bedroom.
Hey, we can get you. We can get you Eric Montross. No big deal.
Yeah. Eric's a good one, too. Yeah. I think he was too big time to barnstorm.
That sounds about right.
Yeah. You know, that was at Bocock Stroud, and I still remember it. I mean, I remember crying when, you know, I was not a Wake Forest fan at all, but, you know, Randolph Childress broke my heart a couple of times. Yeah. So it's really, it gets in your blood, and it doesn't go away. And you get here, and the place exceeds expectations. And then, you know, the fact I got to work with one of our teams made it all the more special, and get to really know, you know, the staff, get to know the coaches. You know, I knew when I was growing up I had not the talent to play, but I would remember watching UNC basketball games, seeing the managers on the end of the bench, thinking, I don't know what those guys do, but it looks pretty cool. I need to get in on that at the right time. So I was fortunate enough to do that, and, you know, just that feeling never goes away. Especially at a place like this.
So how do you compartmentalize it, if I said that properly?
You didn't. Carry on.
And you guys played Carolina, right? I mean, didn't while you...
We did, yeah.
And so what is that experience like? I mean, because obviously you wanted South Carolina to win. So, I mean, what is that like?
I don't know. I'm sure Coach Williams had a great quote when he was at Kansas and played North Carolina. So if I could...
It's not immoral to love two institutions, Jones.
Yeah, there you go.
Exactly, yeah. You know, what's the... Not to be dramatic, once the lights come on, you start playing, you kind of forget about it. Now, it is weird to go over, look in the other dugout and see Mike Fox, who gave you your start in the business. And, you know, it is a little bit awkward, but it's also kind of neat to – it was fun because it was when we played UNC, it was in Charlotte. It was a midweek game. You know, it really was not – obviously you want to win, but it was not like a conference game where you're playing for seeding. It was – I think Coach Fox called it one time like a bonus game. It's not going to hurt you RPI-wise. It can only help you. It's a wonderful atmosphere. It's two great programs going at it, usually in front of a sellout crowd. So it was a little awkward, but once you start playing, That kind of goes away, and then the game's over, and you know, you win, great, and if you lose, well, at least you know you lost some good guys.
I have two comments, and then I have a question.
Okay.
You don't need to comment on these comments because it'll be awkward with you sitting here to hear this. Well, but not the first one. The first one, I told you, if you're listening, that he loves it like you do. You could hear it when he just talked about Carolina. Number two, we love the Rams Club. They do great work, great people, love everything they do. Tyson needs to work for the Rams Club. The end. You can hear it in his answer. He's the guy that group needs. Now, my question. So, how did you go from student manager to basically running Carolina baseball? I mean, during that time period, the answer to every question was, go ask Tyson. It didn't matter if you were asking about what uniforms the Tar Heels were wearing or who was batting third in the lineup. Tyson was probably handling that. So, student managers don't do all the things you did. How did you do that?
Well, I was fortunate that Coach Fox and Dave and Nate, they gave me a lot of additional responsibility. That was some. I knew I wanted to make a career out of college athletics, so I was hopefully not stepping over the line at any of those times, but I was always pressing for additional responsibilities. I wanted to do new things, and, you know, I mean, I worked a lot. I was down there all the time. That's part of it, but what a great place to be. I mean, even the old Bosch, when, you know, had so much character and had, in a very nice way, you know, we'll say character, yeah. But then we get the new place. I mean, it's gorgeous. You know, it's one of the finest facilities in the country. So, I mean, you're in college. I mean, it had everything you needed. And of course, all the team hung out there. So, you know, I got to – you just become really invested. I lived with a lot of the players. I got to know them so well. And we had a great group. I mean, our coaching staff was very cohesive. They're all wonderful, wonderful people, wonderful coaches. So it's almost like, why would you not want to go above and beyond if presented with the opportunity? Like, what's the alternative? Why not do new things? It was only going to help me. Plus, I was doing it for people that I really, really cared about, who cared about me. So it was just a great setup. And I really can't say enough about what the coaches did for the staff, for the student managers, for the players as well. And I wanted to make sure I worked this in, that Coach Fox was not just a great, great coach, but I was just a great leader, a great person who's won a whole heck of a lot of games. And how he's not in the College Baseball Hall of Fame, I don't know. But hopefully that gets rectified soon. But, you know, all the assistant coaches, you become so close with all of them because you spend so much time together and still stay in touch with all of them. You know, Coach Howes was at Georgia Tech. We stayed in great touch. Coach McKay went to Brevard, and now he's doing some other thing. You know, all of them. And obviously, you know, it led to me getting a job at South Carolina. If Coach Ulrich and I didn't become so close at North Carolina, I never would have been down there and have the job that I have now. So that's kind of a long-winded answer to your question. But the crux of it is that the people there were such good people that it just made it so much more fun. And we were rolling. I mean, those 8 years, six times the College World Series, six out of 8 years, I mean, we were rolling. And we had so much fun together. But obviously, winning is a lot of fun, but I was going to say, if you were losing, you probably still have fun. We didn't lose that much, and I don't mean to say that, you know, as a conceited comment, but we didn't lose a lot. I mean, I think at one point one of those teams was 30-5. I mean, we had big leaguers all over the field. It was just a really, really high time for UNC baseball.
I think one of the most underappreciated positions for any athletic team is equipment manager, because you end up just having to do so many different things. Explain to someone who doesn't know what goes into that job what goes into it.
You know, I kind of took the approach with equipment managing and director of baseball operation that you basically take anything and everything off the coach's plate. So you want the coaches to be able to coach and recruit, and if it ain't that, then somebody else needs to be doing it. But specifically equipment managing, you know, everything's coming through that door. You've got 35 players, four coaches who are always going to need something. So you're handling, obviously, jerseys, uniforms, shoes, cleats, pants. And, you know, with baseball, it's interesting because you've got so many players with weird idiosyncrasies and what, you know, you've got to wear these pants and every game. Yeah, there's all kinds of weird things with baseball players. But, you know, and then you're dealing with the visiting teams, you're dealing with the umpires, which is we could have a whole podcast on umpires. And they, you know, really anything A to Z, making sure that, you know, I was just over there hanging out with Tyler and they were rubbing up the baseballs before the scrimmage and dealing with new players getting sized and all kinds of things. So you're really dealing with anything that the players are going to use in the game or that they're wearing. And just imagine how much that just stacks on top of each other, and then add in any other additional responsibilities. So, you know, it wasn't anything for us to finish at 2-3 in the morning. You know, you're doing laundry, you're doing the other team's laundry, you're doing all kinds of stuff. So I was going to say it's a thankless job, but it wasn't a thankless job at UNC because the players and the coaches really did appreciate what you did. So, yeah, you're there till 2 in the morning, but you knew that it was for a good reason. And it was usually you're in a good mood because you just beat somebody. And then whenever you're probably going to beat them again the next day. So it makes it all the more fun.
Tyson mentioned Tyler Puryear, big pod listener. Tyler, what up? Who at Carolina was the weirdest about their uniform stuff? Like, you mentioned people have their idiosyncrasies. Like, what?
Yeah, I think it was generally always pitchers. Because no matter how many times we wore a uniform, it was always the wrong. It was like, come on, man. It's got your name on the back of it. It's this is the same jersey you wore last week. What are you talking about? So it was more as a general. I'm trying to think if there's one specific player. Someone will come to mind. You know, we had a couple of times where a guy would go like 0 for 5, strike out 4 times looking, and he won a new bat. I'm like, come on, man. You can even swing. What do you mean? It's not the bat. Like, relax. Just go hit. You can do it. It's fine. There's no scuff mark on the bat, clearly. So you had things like that. We had some guys that were a little more concerned about how they looked than others that wanted. But Coach Fox ran a pretty tight ship on that. There wasn't a whole lot of – you didn't have a lot of room for swag. If you could get one sweatband or so, you were probably living right. But there wasn't a whole lot of show going on. Your show was, you know, hit a double and then slide into second, and that's about it.
So you had a front row seat, as you mentioned, to – 6 College World Series teams. The coaches will never say this team was the best, this team was the best, this whatever. Which group did you think was the one that had the best chance to win or the most talented team? Which one, now that you have had some space from it, do you go, wow, that was an incredible group?
Yeah, you know, I've thought about this a lot, which was the best team. I think maybe that 08 team, just because that offense was so, so good. And we pitched so. I mean, we finished, what, 3rd in the country, right?
Yeah.
That year. I would probably say the 08 team, I thought all around was probably the best team. I mean, how many big leaguers do we have on that team? I mean, at one point, I think Kyle Seager was hitting 9th. And, you know, he's an all-star. So that just shows you just how good we were. I think the line is really a very, very thin line. I mean, you look at the rotation we had in 06 with Miller, Barden, Woodard. I mean, you can't. That's pretty stellar. In 07, Dustin Ackley's first freshman year. That was a great team. I think sometimes we forget about the 2011 team as well, but that was a really, really good team. And they all the other difficult things, they all start running together. That's one problem. But you know, it'd be hard to separate those 6. But I'd probably go with the 08 team. I thought that was if I was an opponent, that would be the team that would intimidate me the most. And I think evidenced by that is in 08 when we went down to Miami, who was just, I mean, that 08 Miami team, you talk about big leaguers, I mean, I think Grandal was hitting 9th. Mm-hmm. We go down there and they beat us pretty good Thursday night and then come back Friday and then win that game on Saturday. To do that at Miami they had a huge crowd, it was 110 degrees, for us to go into that series, especially after losing that first one, and then get those next two. If I had to point to one series over those 8 years that really was the most impressive, it might be that one. That one, and then 2009 Georgia Tech after, I think it was 09, we kind of had a call that went against us on Saturday. We had won Friday, call goes against us on Saturday. All you know what kind of breaks loose. There's ejections all over the field. And we come out that next morning, played at 1, so you know, that afternoon, and I think we went up like 4-0, and then they tied them. But that was just a game we were not going to lose. We felt like we got robbed a little bit the day before, and the determination from that squad is just like, look, Georgia Tech, y'all can score 10 runs. We're going to beat you. So if I had to pick 2 series, those would be 2 that really, really stick out.
You have made – team's worth of great friends in your time at North Carolina, South Carolina, and beyond. What are some of your favorite or your favorite stories about just being part of those folks' lives after just on the baseball field with them?
Yeah, so that's obviously one of the neatest things that we had certainly had the privilege to do is watch a lot of our guys make their major league debut, thanks to you, Adam, as well. I mean, a couple of them come to mind. One, you know, we go watch Adam Warren make his debut at Yankee Stadium. We sit in George Steinbrenner's suite. I mean, who gets to do that?
That was. We need to talk about that for a minute because that was unbelievable.
Yeah, they had the thing that you know what I'm going
to
say.
Oh, yeah, that's the first thing that comes to my mind.
The little sandwiches had the Yankees logo, like, charred in the bread.
Like little sliders with the Yankee logo on the buns. Like, we were in George Steinbrenner's box, and the main thing I remember is the sliders with the Yankee logo.
That's when you've made it, is when you can just emblazon your sliders. I'm going to – let's get a personal – let's just get the pod logo, and we'll start stamping it on sandwiches moving forward.
Anytime somebody comes in to be on the pod, I'm like, you want a slider?
Yeah.
It's got our logo on the bun.
Here for a ham sandwich with the Carolina Insider Podcast.
Maybe you'd like a peanut butter and jelly. Maybe you should take a look at that before you eat it.
That the dessert card in the Steinbrenner suite was also pretty strong.
Yeah, it was.
I mean, Adam Warren was it was a good side piece to the whole
thing. Whatever, Adam, big league, great, congrats.
Yankee Stadium, whatever. Is any more brisket? Alex White was just here. We went to Alex's debut, and I remember Alex was warming up in the bullpen, and he tossed the ball up to me in the as I were looking over, and that's pretty. I've still got the ball sitting at my house. My favorite memory, though, is I went to see Jacob Stallings. He was in AAA, and they were playing Charlotte, the Knights. And so I went up there, and he played. And so I walked across the street. I'm sitting there at the Residence Inn across from the park waiting on him. And he was taking forever. And I texted him, like, dude, what are you doing? Like, I'm starving. Like, let's go. He said, well, hold on. I think I might be getting called up. I said, well, yeah, take your time. You know, I'll be here whenever. He comes out, and he's got this big smile on his face. He said, I'm pretty sure they're going to call me here in a minute. And then his AAA manager comes out and just gives him a thumbs up, and he gives him a big hug. And so to get to see your best friend realize his childhood dream was obviously really, really cool. So we went, and, that was really, really special because Jacob, you know, is just a great person and certainly a great player and deserves all those wonderful things that have come his way. And then so we go celebrate at Brick's Pizza, much like we did after a win in Chapel Hill. And I was fortunate enough, I went back to Columbia, and Jacob flew the next morning from Charlotte to Chicago. They were playing the Cubs, which is my childhood team. And he texted me, he said, hey, I think I'm going to play. And so I was like, oh, my gosh. Well, there are not many direct flights from Columbia to anywhere. But there was a direct flight. This was like at 1 o'clock local. There was a direct flight at 3 o'clock from Columbia to Chicago. I was like, well, this, I don't even care what it costs. I got to do this. So I was able to get there. I think first pitch was at 7, and I got into Wrigley at about 6:55 and was able to see him make his debut at Wrigley, and that was a really cool thing.
All right. Since you are nice enough to join us, we will give you the freedom to tell us something nice about South Carolina here on the podcast, even though we are, of course, all Tar Heels.
Well, I honestly do love the University of South Carolina, and I think that is primarily because my coworkers at South Carolina are just rock star people. They are extremely helpful. They're dedicated to the cause. You know, we have a lot of Gamecock grads that work in athletics there. And obviously they, like we talked about earlier, they feel like University of South Carolina is the best school in the world because that's where they went to. And they should. And I really do generally enjoy those folks. I enjoy our coaches. I enjoy what I do. So I'll be brief. But I do. I'm sure your listeners are just dying to hear about how great things are at the University of South Carolina. And we have a collection of UNC grads in the department. Charles Waddell is a wonderful mentor, a wonderful Tar Heel, a wonderful Gamecock. Diana Koval, Mark Kingston. I'm going to forget somebody.
Seventh Woods.
Yeah, Seventh Woods.
Former pod guest.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. But, you know, we all get to get together.
Hey, tell Seventh we need him to come sign the big board whenever he's back here.
We can just stop by.
I'll see him Saturday. Jerry Stackhouse rolling in town in Columbia on Saturday. So
he's been on the pod. Tell him we need him to sign the big board.
Just take the board.
Just put it in the back of your car.
Yeah.
It's bigger than you think. I'm going to go ahead and tell you we've had some issues. I've got two on-field questions for you. Number one. You were well known for giving some very inspiring pregame speeches. What were you saying in the middle of that huddle of players before the Diamond Heels took the field, and what was your best one?
Yeah, sometimes you have a moment of clarity and you get in there and you say something really, really good. But honestly, most of the time, you know, Coach Fox does not curse. Coach Fox does not curse. You know, I grew up idolizing Dean Smith. He didn't curse. But in those huddles, most of the time, you just get in there and start cussing, and they just go crazy. And that's all you really had to do. You just, you know, you drop an F-bomb, and the guys are fired up to go. I mean, I had a couple of good ones. You know, I would often try to end the really good ones with the Roy Williams crouch and start shaking your fists and going down. So there were a couple in the ACC tournament. I remember one. We played Duke. And, you know, I mean, it's not really need much motivation to play Duke. I mean, it's Duke. But I can't remember what I had a pretty good one. I don't remember what I said, but I remember it was really good because some of the players were like, man, that one got me.
You dropped four F-bombs in that one. It was really good.
That thing you said about the well and the bell, that got me right here. I don't know how you came up with that.
Yeah, you know, God bless. The good thing was I was there for so long, I would remember the good ones and just recycle them every couple of years.
Yeah.
Like,
those guys are gone.
Yeah, but, I mean, there were some tough ones, you know, midweek. Tuesday at 4:00. I mean, you gotta dig deep, man. There's only so much you can come up with, so that's when really you just start cussing. But yeah, we had a lot of wins after that. Not because of the pregame speech, but it was more because I did it one to Mark Fleury actually yelled at me to come get in the huddle, and we won and beat somebody. And then of course, you know, we have to do that for the next 5 years. But yeah, that was fun.
Okay, my second on-field question. On a percentage basis, the majority of the people in this room have had a run-in with the head baseball coach at NC State. You had one. You're in that percentage. Can you describe to us what occurred on that fateful day?
We were in the third base dugout, and let's see. They were on offense. We hit somebody, not in it was a tie game or something, and what are we
still
doing?
Mad about it?
I mean, and Coach Ava and I have become friends now, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah, we'll take that out too.
Yeah, but I don't know. They just started going crazy because they thought we hit some. Like, what are we gonna do? Put the winning run on base? First off, it was just, I mean, the lack of baseball knowledge behind the whole thing was, I thought, insulting to the game. Like, we're not gonna put the winning run on base late in the game. Like, what are you talking about? And then he just started screaming and yelling, and I just took exception to it. I think he told Coach Forbes something, and I was like, okay, well, we don't need to be having all that. And so I think I just responded, you know, to that, and, you know, we won, of course, shocker. And so that was good. But yeah, it's a great rivalry. Sometimes a rivalry gets in the way of common sense, like, yeah, they're probably not going to intentionally hit a guy to put the winning run on base, but that's what makes it a fun rivalry. But yeah, there have been quite a few of those but you know, my I guess I shouldn't say hatred of NC State, but that goes deep too. I mean, that started at the 2004-2005 ACC women's basketball tournament,
where many things do.
Yeah, in Greensboro. You know, North Carolina was, I think it's, I can't remember the year. It was somewhere around there, and we had, I think Camille Little was on the team, and something happened, and these NC State people started yelling at me. This was, you know, 65-year-old man. I was, I guess, about 13, 14, something. So, you know, it makes sense. But, yeah, I probably should stop.
I would just like to say, of the three of us, I am the one who did not have any run-ins with any head coaches, Adam.
Well, you're the one doing something wrong, because they're sure they did plenty to warrant some commentary.
Maybe if they had put on a horse mascot costume, you could have got a little more fired up.
Who, to, what for? You mentioned Dustin Ackley earlier. Dustin, same high school. You knew Dustin very well. I'd be interested in y'all's relationship, your thoughts on his career, both at Carolina and beyond.
Sure. Yeah. So Dustin went to North Forsyth. He would be upset with me if I did not mention he went his first 3 years at South Stokes High School in Walnut Cove. So I'll get that out of the way. But yeah, both graduated from North Forsyth. He arrived here the year after I did, and then we were roommates for 2 years. So Dustin was one of my closest friends in college. Obviously, an incredible talent. It was really, you know, a privilege to get to watch him up close. I think Coach Williams wrote him a letter after he graduated and said watching him play baseball was one of the greatest highlights of his. I mean, are you kidding me? Roy Williams tells you that? Then, that's some pretty high praise. But it was a really joy to get to know Dustin and so many of the players. You know, I lived with all of them, so you get to see him off the field and build lifelong relationships. I mean, I was in a ton of weddings. I was able to see Dustin's debut. We went to Omaha the same day we clinched or won the Super Regional. Dustin got called up, so wasn't able to go. But that's a good reason not to be able to go. I'm glad I wasn't able to go. So that was a lot of fun. And Dustin's a great, great person. It was a great, great player. The things that he was able to do on the field is almost just kind of, you know, laughable. You watch him, it was nothing for Dustin to get 3, 4, 5 hits a game. And, you know, we really, I do think, took advantage and were aware of just how great of a college baseball player he was. Not taking away anything from any of our other guys, but Dustin was just, he was really in a class of his own, not just a unit, but in the country. I mean, he was National Player of the Year, so naturally. But yeah, he was a special, special talent.
You made the decision to be very open about some things that are personal to you in recent years, which people may or may not know. Being involved in sports, in what way did that factor into your decision to do that?
Yeah. So I came out in 2016. When I was at, I worked for the baseball team in South Carolina. So the whole reason, well, first off, the reason I came out in general is because I couldn't really take it anymore. It was just kind of this oppressive feeling. And actually, you know, the reason I was able to come out too, it all leads back to North Carolina baseball. The first person I told was Jacob Stallings, you know, my best friend in the world. I remember I was in his car and I was in Nashville for the coaches convention, and he just said, "So anything new going on?" I was like, "Well, yeah, kind of." So I told him and yeah, he was a wonderful friend to have at that time. And so then I told the team after we lost in the Super Regional to Oklahoma State. It was 1 or 2 days after the Pulse nightclub shooting, which is the gay nightclub in Orlando where there's the shooting and very, very tragic incident. And I kind of realized, you know what, I don't need to really hide anymore. So I told the team and I'd waited until the end of the year because I didn't want to be any kind of distraction, whatever. And also, I knew I wasn't going to tell the team until I was ready for the whole world to know. Because let me tell you, college baseball players are not the, you know, everybody in the world was going to know after I told them. But the reason I mainly came out is because I knew that I was the first person in college baseball to come out as a member of the gay community, I certainly wasn't the only one. And I knew that. After 8 years, well, at that time, it was 6 years in college baseball, that certainly it would be statistically impossible for me to be the only person. And I think people in sports are a little bit slow to come out. And I was hoping that by me coming out would help some other people. And since that time, I've had folks contact me about, you know, how do I do this? Here's where I'm at in my life story. And I think that was the primary reason. And also, I wanted to show people, like, yeah, I work at the University of South Carolina in Columbia, South Carolina, and I came out and everybody's perfectly fine with it. You know, there wasn't any negative feedback from coworkers, from the team, from the coaches. It was a freeing experience, and one that I think that anyone who is struggling with that, we all have to come to the time in our lives when you're ready to become open about it. No one needs to do it earlier than they're ready to. But it was honestly the best thing I ever did because I could go about living my life without trying to hide. And I think the foundation that I had of being a part of a team was certainly helpful with that. And obviously, I told our coaches here before I told our team, and obviously talked to Coach Holbrook, who was a head coach at the time, and he was nothing but supportive, as well as Coach Tanner, our athletic director. And I'll tell you who else was just an absolute rock for me and supporter of me during that time was Dick Bedore. And I remember talking to him about it, and he sent me the nicest note after I came out, and has continued, and we've continued to remain close, but he's someone that really embodies what you think of when you're a Tar Heel, and not just when I worked here, but for someone like him to take the time and the effort and the energy to be there when I was going through that was really, really impactful and really special.
Reigning potty winner, Dick Bedore, the top interview from a season ago.
Yeah, he's a potty winner, so all those things you just said, we already knew that. Basically what potty winner means.
No big deal. So you said the words there, oppressive feeling. You talked about feeling like you were hiding while you were living. I don't know how else to ask this other than, what is that like? What kind of toll does that take on you?
Well, when you wake up in the morning, you think about it. Every time you do anything, you're thinking, oh gosh, well, if I say this, if I do that, is that going to tip somebody off? So it's constantly on your mind. It's a constant feeling of, you know, just trying to hide anything and everything about it. And you look back on it, it's like, God, what was I doing to myself? You know, but you know, people come to a point in their life when they're ready to talk about it at different times. So I don't think I did anything wrong. You know, I wish I could go back in time and just say, hey, it's going to be okay. Like, it's going to be okay. It's going to get better. You know, the cliche saying it gets better. I mean, it does. There's a reason it's cliche. It's because it's true. You know, but folks just have to do things on their own schedule. But to your point, it becomes such a weight on you that you can't go about your daily life. And I found that it was changing who I was in a negative way because I spent so much energy trying not to be something. I couldn't be who I was. So it was making me not myself. And that's kind of when I was like, all right, this has to stop. I just got to tell people who I am. The people who loved me before, I'm pretty sure are still going to love me. And if anybody has a problem, then, you know, they probably weren't by my side for the right reasons anyway. But to a person, I've been very, very fortunate. And I think it's part of the narrative too, that maybe that sometimes athletics in general isn't as progressive on this issue as some other industries or activities, whatever. And that just hasn't been my experience. And it's not like I've worked and lived all my life in the Carolinas. You know, I love being a Southerner. I love Southern history and culture. But, you know, I think a lot of people were surprised when I came out and had such good experience. But, you know, you can work at a Southern institution and be gay and it'll be just fine because you're not the only one. Like, we don't need to hide. There's no reason to hide. People just need to be who they are and work on that at their own schedule and know that there's a lot of other people in college athletics who experience the same kind of thing and are there. There's a massive support network in college athletics. So if anyone is out there listening and is struggling or not sure what to do, I mean, there's a lot of people that are in the exact same boat. I mean, Drew Martin, who was at TCU at the time, was really helpful to me. Several other people within college athletics were extremely helpful to me. So you're certainly not alone.
Was it odd to go from this is something I'm thinking about every day and I'm so concerned about how people are going to take this to this is just me and it turns out that no one really cares? I mean, we care, right? But like we don't care,
right? Yeah, no, I know exactly what you're saying. Yes, because you spend all day, every waking hour thinking about, you know, how are you going to deal with this? What are you going to do? Are you going to tell anybody ever? Are you just going to kind of let it just sort of be a thing that nobody really talks about? And so each time that you come out, it gets easier. Like, you know, the first time I told Jacob was really hard for me to get the words out. And then, you know, you then tell your parents and then your friends. And then I'm standing in the locker room in June in front of 35 college baseball players telling them. And once I did that, I was like, well, shit, I can tell anybody now. Because they're all looking at me like, what is he talking about? Where's he going with this? You know, Coach Holbrook did the, you're so proud of you. Great season. We came up a little short, but yada, yada. And by the way, Tyson wants to say something.
What a great situation.
Yeah. It's like, well, okay, well, here we are. Couldn't really, can't get out of it now.
Guys, I'm proud of you too. All right.
Yep. That's right.
Have a great offseason.
Yeah. Let's really work on the meal money sheet.
So. Yeah. Let's work on contact hitting this summer, guys. We need a few more doubles.
Yeah. So, but now, you know, it's moved to the phase where, you know, people know, and now you can make jokes about it and be, you know, have a good time and just be who you are. You know, you reflect back on just a few years ago how difficult it was, and you just wish you could, you know, go back in time and say, hey, it's going to be okay. Like, it's gonna be fine. Just let people know and move on, because it's a part of your life, but it's not who you are. You know, it's I'm proud to be who I am, certainly. I don't want to give off that impression, but it's not something that should prevent anyone from accomplishing professionally or personally what they want to accomplish. So, there were certainly some worries about me as like, okay, well, how is this going to hurt me professionally? Like, you know what? Number one, I don't think it is. Number two, if it was going to hurt me professionally, that's not a place I want to work anyway. Because eventually, there's going to be something else that comes up that's going to realize this isn't where I want to be. So you kind of get over those hurdles, and then now you just, you know, you go about living your life, and then you're 4 years later, you're talking about it on a podcast.
The pinnacle.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the hundreds of thousands of, if not millions of people around the world.
I don't want people to think we're somehow belittling this or that it's not difficult. Like, you make it sound very easy when I feel like I know that it probably is not.
Right.
Why do you think that you had such a positive experience when there are so many other people out there who would say that they did not have a positive experience in a similar situation?
Right. You know, you're right. It was difficult because I guess I probably knew when I was in high school or early in college, and then kept it to myself for, do the math here, you know, 10 plus years. So, yeah, it was really hard. It was really hard because you just don't know how people are going to react. And it's something that you have to be very selective on who you want to talk to about it, because you just, it's a personal thing. It's something that it's uncharted territory. So, you know, I did a lot of reading. I did a lot of researching. And when I say that, I mean about people who came out that worked in college athletics. So, you know, it is really hard, but I think what was helpful to me is, number one, I knew my parents were going to be perfectly fine and love me no matter what. So I always knew in the back of my mind that I was going to have no issue there at all. That was the least of my worries. And that makes me very fortunate, because that is not everyone's experience. It's just, giving you an example, when two folks in the LGBTQ community meet, you know, for the first or second time, basically one of the questions that are asked is, so, you know, boils down to, so do your parents still love you? I mean, think about that. There's a lot of people who don't have that supportive network of family and friends, which fortunately I did. And not only did I have my family and my friends, but I had at that, you know, let's see, 8-12 different teams of people that I could lean on, who were going to be there for me. I mean, the some of the text messages and the notes and calls of support from, you know, who's who of North Carolina baseball, you know, Chad Flack, Mike Cavicini, Dustin Ackley. I mean, all American baseball players, but when it came to acceptance, they were all Americans there too. So I think having that network, which I was very blessed to have, because most people don't have that many people that you can rely on. And then other people like Mr. Bedore, like Kevin Stallings, Jacob's dad, was someone who helped me through this process, and he was an exceptional resource for me, obviously knowing me and knowing the coaching world. And then friends here like the biggest North Carolina baseball fan in the world, Tom Jensen, was someone that I relied on heavily to help guide me through this. So the I can certainly trace back to being in Chapel Hill and the relationships I had at North Carolina and the relationships I have in Columbia at South Carolina that enabled me to kind of muster up the courage to tell people that, you know, this is who I am.
Okay, you just said the word courage, and you love Dean Smith, and you know a lot about Dean Smith. So we've had people in here who have talked about all the things that Coach Smith did, which we all know and everybody listening knows, and recruiting Charles Scott and having Charles Scott on the team and the way he told his team to embrace that situation. Do you in any way see any parallels here with what you've had to do and chosen to do with what happened in Chapel Hill 60 years ago?
I will never in my life compare myself to Dean Smith, who's not only the greatest coach in the history of sports, but one of the greatest humanitarians. And I'm like Coach Wing, you know, when I remember in middle school reading The Carolina Way and idolizing Dean Smith, and deservedly so, and he deserves all praise possible. But, you know, I do think you can trace back to Coach Smith, especially when you talk about what he did in the 1960s when it comes to integration, in that when Dean Smith did that at that time, he wasn't the Dean Smith that we think about as retiring as all-time winningest coach. I mean, he was a young head coach who, you know, was an assistant and then becomes a head coach, and he's ready to say, you know, he put a lot on the line. In 1960s are a lot different than 2016. So I think it's important for all of us to remember that we don't need to just think about Coach Smith as the basketball coach. We need to think about Coach Smith as the person. He was always pushing for equality. He was always pushing to make sure that Chapel Hill and the campus community was inclusive. And I have no doubt that Dean Smith was certainly ahead of the curve when it came would come to things like LGBTQ equality. You know, his church was Binkley Baptist was certainly on the front lines of so many, many social and political challenges of the day. I mean, they were certainly a group that was always pushing for just social justice and equality. You know, I remember one story about Coach Smith is that, and I mean, tell me who the player was. One of his players asked if he could miss practice because he wanted to join the cafeteria workers who were on strike for fair wages. And Coach Smith said, yes, you know, that is important. You believe in it. You came to me. And I think that speaks totally to what Coach Smith was all about. And he understood that with athletics, we do have much more of a voice and a position to advocate for social justice, social change, equality, than maybe something else. And people can argue if that's good or bad. I happen to think it's good. And so when you have this platform, I think you need to utilize it for positive change. And I can directly trace that back to sitting in my home in Winston-Salem reading Coach Smith's book about why he felt it was important. And Coach Smith was a forward thinker. He was someone who was always ready to fight for the least among us. I think he practiced what he preached. And again, he was doing that at a time where he wasn't the all-time winningest basketball coach. He did it without thinking about, you know, what bad could happen to me here. So, you know, he did it because it was the right thing to do. And I think that's where I kind of came from, is like, you know, this is who I am. There were people who came out before me in much more challenging times, and people who have done this and have found acceptance. I need to do this and see if I can't help somebody too.
Texting while driving takes your eyes off the road for 5 unanswered seconds. And at highway speeds, that's like driving the length of a football field with your eyes closed. Trusted Choice Independent Insurance Agents of North Carolina wants you to stay safe behind the wheel. Put down your phone while driving. Let's have a hands-free NC. Learn more at trustedchoice.com. Find an agent near you. They are the sponsor of that and all of our interviews here on the Carolina Insider.
When I was driving into town today, one of the electronic signs, the traffic signs, said phones down, eyes up.
Mm.
That reminded me.
Did you go, hey. Steering wheel's up here, buddy.
Yeah. Did you ever play 7-Up in elementary school?
Oh, yeah. Heads up, 7-Up.
Yeah. And they would say, what was it they would say? Like, heads down, thumbs up. That was like the go sign.
And then you would go around and you'd tap people's thumb, and they'd have to see who it was. Is that what it was?
Yeah.
What was the point of this game? I remember I enjoyed it.
To pass time when you couldn't go outside for recess when it was raining.
Yeah.
You'd put your head on your desk, allegedly you couldn't see.
Right.
And you'd put your thumb up, and there were 7 people, I guess the 7-Up, you might say, and they'd go around and tap your thumb, and then the teacher or whoever would say, all right, I don't know what she would say, heads up, seven down, or something. And you'd have to guess, if someone had tapped your thumb, who it was.
Yeah, that's what it is.
What a game.
Yeah.
Do they still play that?
I don't know.
I bet they don't, but I think they should. Did you ever secretly, like, leave your eyes open so you could see people's shoes?
Where you just
have your, just ran into the microphone. Where you just have, like, your forehead on your forearm, and then you just be looking down.
At the shoes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the stakes were high. You didn't want to lose in 7-Up, because if you guessed right, I think you got to be the thumb tapper.
Yeah, I think so. And everybody wanted that.
Yeah. What a position of power. It's like passing out the swish.
Man, swish. Do they do that anymore?
I don't know.
Or are they just letting the wild west of oral hygiene happen?
Has somehow America progressed past the point where we have to do that in elementary school? I had a note that I didn't have to swish. Everyone was very jealous.
Wow.
Yeah. My mom didn't make me.
Man.
Oof. She told me I brush my teeth at home.
Yeah. You had plenty of fluoride.
Yeah.
Everything's fine. Okay. So there was a basketball scrimmage on Monday. And Adam and I were there. Adam, what'd you see?
Well, I think we should say right off the top that I think sometimes people misperceive, especially basketball practice, as, well, they just run up and down the court for a couple hours, and you can tell a lot by the lineups, and here's who the starters are. It's really not like that. And the lineups changed some during the scrimmage. The Tar Heels played 2 20-minute, quote-unquote, halves. And Carolina's going to be good this year. But part of it also was just to see the details of game day under the current situation.
Right.
So you had the bench socially distanced. It's going to be very odd seeing Coach. It appears at the Smith Center, Coach Williams is going to be basically where he normally is, and the assistants are going to be on the baseline.
So what it looked like.
And the players are going to be spread out between. So that's going to – it's. Everything's going to look different. The first several rows of Smith Center seats are going to be pushed back to open up more room behind both benches. No risers. If you're used to the risers, they're not there. The other side is going to be pushed back also. The whole thing is going to look different. From a basketball perspective, I do think the Tar Heels are going to be better. Dayron Sharpe was very good. The guards were very good. Kerwin Walton really shot it well.
Yeah, he shot it really well.
That's the best I think I've seen him shoot the ball during preseason practice.
Hmm.
He shot it really
well.
He's
a gamer.
Yeah.
How much do you think Coach Williams wishes he could, in a real game, have the ability to do what he did multiple times in this game, where he would just yell, "Time!" And he'd go out there and lecture somebody about what they did right or wrong on a particular play?
I think he much more enjoys, let's say, the white team, which is usually the starters, misses a box out, rather than having to wait for the next timeout to instruct them on what they did wrong, just put them on the line right then and make them run, which they did several times on Monday.
We know this to be the case, but I think the competition in the front court is really going to make Carolina better, because I think, like, for example, if Armando Bacot wants to play, he's going to have to play well. If Garrison Brooks wants to play, he's going to have to play well, because there are enough guys there where I think that is, if you're having a bad stretch, or if you have a couple possessions in a row or whatever it is, that the bench can be a motivator, I think, much more, especially in that front court, than it has been in the last year or two.
And what better it's so much better to have that flexibility, because we've seen, other than Garrison Brooks, who I think is going to be consistent every night.
Sure.
The other players are younger and are going to have some inconsistency, and we saw that with Bacot last year. This year, when Bacot isn't having a great day, although he did have a very good day on Monday in the scrimmage, okay, Armando, go take a seat on the socially distanced bench. Yeah. Let's give Dayron Sharpe a shot at this, or Walker Kessler, or Walker Miller, who was very good. It just gives you so many more options. I think Carolina's going to be really, really good on the glass. But I think when they're the best on the glass is not just when the big guys rebound, but when the wings rebound, and I think that's yet to be seen, how good the wings on this year's team will be in rebounding. But the big guys are going to be excellent, and Carolina is going to get a lot of offensive rebounds. The hope is there won't be quite as many missed shots for them to rebound. And I thought the guards showed they could score in a variety of ways, either going to the basket or shooting it from the perimeter.
Well, Adam, Cam Johnson told us that Puff is a good rebounder. That's going to be part of his role.
Problem solved.
We heard it straight from Cam Johnson.
That's right.
So, Adam, I'm kind of in this weird limbo of I'm stunned that basketball starts a week from tomorrow, but at the same time, it's midway through November, and there hadn't been a basketball game yet. We're normally, I mean, the Tar Heels in a normal year would have played at least two games by now, at least. And so it's just it's some hashtag challenging times.
I would expect that College of Charleston game to probably be a little ragged.
Oh, come on. Of course it will be.
You got no exhibition game. You got no scrimmage other than against your own team. And you got no other games prior to that. There are going to be errors.
Yes. Yeah. I mean,
you've got a freshman point guard playing his very first game.
Well, and then Carolina goes to Maui/Asheville and plays UNLV. I mean, it would be awesome if Carolina could win that event, but it's going to have some stiff competition. And I really think you will be able, well, we always encourage you this to do this. There's no sense in overreacting to one or two performances in these first 2 months. I think more than ever, it would be crazy to overreact either way, because I think you have the potential for some weird games and weird outcomes here over the first 6 weeks of the season.
And you have the completely unknown variable of, we talked about this last time, from Thanksgiving to the second week of January, there's nothing but basketball. So what will that do to the Tar Heels? And we talked about this some before football, that the football team had an advantage, especially offensively, and that almost everyone was back. And they pretty much knew what to do. They knew what they needed to get better at. When Phil Longo called out something, they all immediately knew what it was. It's not going to be like that for basketball. We saw even at the scrimmage, they had to go through some of the pregame drills that the Tar Heels usually do to show Caleb Love, for example, what to do. Not because Caleb Love isn't smart, but because he's never done it before. And he's going to have to do it for real for the very first time in an actual game, and that's going to be different.
We're brought to you by the College Foundation of North Carolina. Visit cfnc.org for everything you need to plan, apply, and pay for college this application season, and it's now in an updated format as well. Thank you, College Foundation of North Carolina, for your sponsorship, cfnc.org. Adam, anything else?
No.
Okay. We're back later in the week. We have good guests coming up. The Tuesday show a week from now, likely going to be Roadhouse Challenge, so don't forget. Go get your votes in. And then next Friday, there will not be a regular edition of the pod. That's next Friday. That's the day of the Notre Dame game. There will be a rapid reaction pod after the Notre Dame game. So, regular episode coming up on this upcoming Friday of this week. Roadhouse Challenge episode, likely. There will be an episode. We believe it's going to be that Roadhouse Challenge episode next Tuesday. Then only a rapid reaction podcast on the day after Thanksgiving, which will come after the Notre Dame game. You got all that scheduled out in your mind, Adam?
That's the easy part of the schedule.
Yeah.
You just hold tight for December.
Okay. So for now, we're going to let Tyson Lusk and the RZA get us out of here on the latest edition of the Carolina Insider.
I'm Tyson Lusk. See you later, Big Grits.
When I was small, we had nothing at all.
Box of sugar and a stick of margarine. A hot pot of grits kept my family from starving. Steamy hot meal served less than 5 minutes. Big silver pot boiling water salt in it. House full of brothers and sisters, the pot's missing. Pilgrim on a box on the stove in the kitchen.
When I was small, we had nothing at all. We used to eat.
See you later, Big Grit.
The preceding has been a Learfield IMG College presentation of the Tar Heel Sports Network.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader, like that car riding your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.